6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Maddie Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. We have a very special guest with us today, a Husker legend. Very excited to get to him in just a moment. Real quick, make sure to visit the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. And while you're there, subscribe on YouTube, follow us on social media, sign up for the newsletter. It's all free. It's all free. And you can feed that addiction all off season until the Huskers kick off in Kansas City in late August. Commonfan.co. Check it out. Also get your certified Piedmontese beef. Go to cpbeef.com. Use the promo code COMMONFAN, all one word, COMMONFAN. Order all the beef your heart desires. You get 25% off with that promo code. So go to cpbeef.com and check it out. Our guest today is a Husker legend. You have so many awards and honors, Jabba. All conference, all American. Pitcher of the year, pitcher of the week. His name is Jabba Chamberlain. He's a Husker legend. How are you, Jabba?
Good, man. How are you guys? Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Our pleasure.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to point out that the Common Fan, you know, we are a Husker football podcast. The Common Fan Board of Directors has granted us a special waiver to have a Husker legend baseball player on. But they did give me one direction, and that is to apologize that you had to suffer through the Bill Callahan era while you were at Nebraska. And so we're all
supposed to apologize. That West Coast offense didn't really work for us. I don't think that's the right guys we recruited for that offense when Bill came in. So, that kind of went south on us and not west. So
did you go when you were playing ball, Jabba, at Nebraska? Did you go to all the football games or a lot of them?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, my dad worked in the West Stadium, so okay. I was always there. And then obviously when I went to school there, actually it was the first time that I ever got drunk. And then I made the stupid decision to go sit in the stands for the first time. And that was not a good decision. I was like, I'm going to go hang out with my dad and go eat at the training table. And I was like, this is way better.
Nice.
You know, the football team in those days was driving a lot of people to drink, I think.
Yeah. Yes. It still does, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
We all can't be Notre Dame fans.
Yes.
We'll get to that in a little bit.
Thank God for that, Jabba. Thank God for that.
I know, right?
And before we get too underway, congratulations are in order. Jabba, you recently got engaged. Is that right?
Unfortunately, to Geoff's sister. So I'm
not unfortunate about her, just unfortunate.
No. That I get the Geoff's side of it.
Geoff's the brother-in-law now. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I know, right?
And just so we're clear, Colin fans, that's not a joke. It's not like he's making some joke about my sister. He actually is engaged to her.
Yeah, that's for real. That's for real. Jabba is engaged. And he's marrying Geoff and Lincoln's sister. That's
it kind of comes off like, yeah, I'm engaged, all right, to your sister.
No, we've all known, those of us who have known Geoff a long time have known Catherine for a long time, and she's not just such a sweetheart. And so excited for both of you. Again,
happy to have you in the family, Jabba.
I don't know how you're gonna deal with Geoff, but you call me and Matt anytime.
Yeah. I'm probably going to need you guys as a lifeline at some point here.
Yeah, no sure. problem. No
We're problem. Well experienced. A lot of experience dealing with this guy.
Perfect.
Well, there's all kinds of stuff we want to ask you about, Jabba. I got to say, what year did you graduate from high school? Are you about 04?
2003.
03. Okay.
Yep.
So you're a couple years younger than us in school. Mm-hmm. I have memories of playing Legion ball down at Sherman Field, and you were always down there running around. I just remember, like, when I was a kid, I was always shy of like the older guys and the players. You'd always just come up to the dugout and talk to all the players, and like you were always around the game, weren't you?
Yeah, it was something that, my dad and I, like, he taught me to keep old school scorebook, and then it was something that we just latched onto. My dad loved baseball, and it was something that we shared as a memory, because obviously my dad couldn't do it. So it was just fun, and I got to learn about the game before that I could even play it. So that was the really fun part. And dad always put me around, like, whether he was like announcing softball games and I was the bat boy, or he was taking me to games and doing all that. And so it was just something that we shared that we loved. And, it was absolutely fantastic. Like, I didn't know any different. It was like, I was always at a field or doing something or a game, any sports thing, honestly. Like, and, it was, whether it was basketball, football, baseball, like, I was always around it, and have made so many dear friends throughout the years of just being on a field, being around a field, being on a court, and just, doing that. And that's anything from referees to all of that. And it's just been really cool. And sports obviously was an important part of my life. And I was fortunate enough to be able to play it at the next level and all the way throughout. And now getting to watch my son, son's playing in college. So that's super cool and way more stressful than I ever felt playing at all, like watching his games and watching him and do all that stuff. I get more stressed out. I'd leave games after watching Carter and I'd be like, I'm way more exhausted than if I pitched six innings or if I closed the game out or whatever I was doing. I was like, man, this is stressful. But yeah, it's just, it's always been a field or basketball court or some sporting event that has always, he always drug me to whether I wanted to go to it or not. And more times than not, it was fun and it was great. And I was just a short, fat kid, and I loved the concession stand, so that was always fantastic.
There
too.
You go.
Well, where's your son playing? Where's your son playing?
He's at Hutchinson. Yep. So he
nice Hutch. Cool.
We went the junior college route because he kind of wanted to figure out if he wanted to play a position or if he wanted to pitch. And we had so many offers, and it was a way different process than it was when I was going through it. Like, when you actually sat down with coaches, now it's like they just email you and DM you on Twitter and all that other stuff. And it's way different. And, with all their NIL stuff now, and there's some things I like about it. I actually was on the phone with Coach Childress yesterday, and we were kind of just talking, and it's like, some things are good, some things are for the bad, but yeah, it's just, I mean, everything's evolving as we well know, and how we get, sports information as it is now. It's like, it's completely different, obviously, hence how big podcasts are and how great they are and how you can get it out to fans and have content compared to, opening up a newspaper, right? And trying to get a box score there. Now it's just completely different. So yeah, it's all changing, and I'm just getting more gray as time goes. So, but it's fun. And just, the fields and all the great memories, and hopefully Carter continues to go and I get to do more with him as I did with my dad.
Yeah, exactly. Well, kind of pass that on. Yeah.
Jabba, I don't know if I'll get a better segue to ask what I wanted to ask you about. You know, you hear all these former professional athletes, including MLB players, talk about travel ball or select ball for these kids. And a lot of them, it seems like, at least from what I hear, mostly in a negative light, you know. And so I've had one going into his third year of playing travel ball, select ball, whatever you want to call it. And I have one that's going into his first year now. And I guess I wanted to get your thoughts on that and how you feel about it. Because for me, it's a slippery slope, right? Like you want them to be on the field, like you were around the game so much. You want them to play as many reps as possible. But, you know, you hear these guys say, well, they should have the chance to be a kid, yep, right? But if they're not playing, you know, and getting the reps, are they falling behind the other kids who are? And if the main goal is just for them to play high school sports, like, where do you come out on all that? Do you think it's beneficial? Did Carter play? Like, what do you think about all the youth travel sports?
I think there's a time and a place for all of it, honestly. My biggest thing too, and I always go back to an article Christian McCaffrey did probably a few years ago, and it talked about how him being the best football player was because he ran track, he played basketball, and doing all those. Now you're seeing, and Matt, to your point, it's you are essentially right sometimes, because now you're seeing at the high school level where, you know, kids are being recruited. And it's like, if you're not playing baseball all year round, well, we don't really like that, and we want you to focus and always. But then you see, and we've seen a turn in all sports. Now injuries early on in the year are, I think, up 80, like almost 80%, because kids now aren't taking breaks.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and go, go, go.
Yeah, and they don't understand their body. Like, as a professional, sometimes less is more. Like, we would get into August and September, and we would get young guys that would get called up. And I'd be like, dude, if you get here before 4 o'clock, I'm going to fine you $500. Because they're like going. Like, there's really no off season per se. And I loved my son played hockey. We tried soccer. That didn't work. Thank goodness.
For the best.
Yeah, right. And I know, I still know. I tried to learn it, but no idea. No
stoppage
idea.
Who understands stoppage time, yeah, anyway? That's stoppage time.
I have no idea. And so then, you know, we played hockey, and I loved hockey. I still love hockey to this day. And then he's basketball. And then we kind of had to pick one or the other because we couldn't do both. And I just think there's not enough of time. And I told Carter, too. I go, you need to go play poker with your buddies. You need to go hang out. You need to be a kid. You need to have fun. I mean, there were times where he got his stupid car stuck in a ditch. And, you know, it's just like all these things. And it's like, you got to do that as a kid. Because yeah, life goes by way too fast. And then I just feel like sometimes it becomes like a job. And it's like all of these things. And I hear so many stories where not only are you paying for these kids to play travel, select ball, whatever it is, then they're going to the perfect games and all of that other stuff. And now it's like you're paying 10, 15 grand for what? The opportunity to maybe get there? Like, I have had parents come up to me and is like, can you teach my son? I want him to get to the next level, blah, blah, blah. I go, but what is that next level? Is that just competing? Is that, well, I want him to be in the big leagues. Just because I played there doesn't mean I can get your kid there.
Right.
It's yep, just, that's kind of what it has become. And they have been so sports specific now, where I think it kind of takes away from a lot of other things that different sports can facilitate you being better in what the sport that you excel in. Basketball, yes, extremely helped Carter play with footwork and all the other things. And, you know, now they have all the access to, you know, the training facilities and mm-hmm, doing all that. Like, literally, my son lives at Kratos when he's home. And it's just, it's so different and so, so specific to certain things, where I think it just gets, for us as parents, too, it's like, you don't want to be on the other end of it, right? Whereas like, am I doing enough to put my kid in the best position?
Yeah.
And then sometimes, and I've come to find out in dealing with all of this, that parents are the worst.
Yes.
Like, yes. We are the worst because, and sounding hypocritical as I'm going to say this, but it's like, okay, we want them to be a kid and have fun, but also we want to put them in the best position that we can.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's like, okay, hey, you need to go work out. You need to do this. And then now as my son has progressed, I'm like, okay, did I do the right thing? Like, did I put him in the best position? Did I make sure that he had, like, he still enjoys it? Because there's been so many kids that have been great athletes that Carter played with and against, where they could have gone to the next level, whether it was D1, NAIA, whatever it was, but they were so burnt out that they like, I just want to be a student. Like, I just want to be a kid and enjoy that stuff. So there's a great balance, and every family is different. Every kid is different. There's some that are more motivated than others. There's some that aren't. And it's just kind of finding that balance. And, you know, it's tough as a parent because are you doing enough? Are you not doing enough? Are you doing too much? And then it's like, you know, you get the overbearing ones where it's like, he's going to be the next first round draft pick. But so what do I need to do? I don't know.
Well, so it's also how I wonder how many times parents are saying that to you, Jabba. It's what dad wants. It's what mom wants. It's not even what the kid wants. You know, everybody's like reliving their childhood, like Uncle Rico. You know, back in 82, I could throw a pick a quarter mile.
The way I look at it, I think what Java's really saying is I did it the right way. I ran that 7-minute mile when I was in high school and I achieved that goal. And then I just focused on being a kid and not participating in athletics at all after that. So I did it the right way.
You reached the pinnacle in high school. I think that's what he's saying.
I don't think Java is saying that kids should be encouraged to smoke Marlboro Lights in a you know, Jetta driving around.
And drive their Dodge Neon around.
Dodge Neon, whatever it was.
Don't you speak ill of the Neon. Did you ever speak ill of the Neon?
But we all have that friend that hung out with all the athletes that wasn't an athlete. We all have those.
That was Jeff.
Guilty.
That was
guilty.
Jeff.
100%.
I'm right here.
Without a doubt. Like, I can think of guys that's like, they hung out with us and it was like super random. And I'm like, you have nothing to do with sports. And he's like, yeah, but I just hang out.
But he's here.
Yeah.
he makes us laugh. We'll let him stick around.
Yeah, he can hang out. Yep.
Entertain us, nerd.
Yeah. Well, Geoff, I know you had a question you wanted to ask, but I wanted to start to get a little bit more of Jabba's story from his playing day.
Yeah.
Do you want to, should we go there for now? Okay.
Go for it.
So, and Jabba, I remember following your career too. I know you went to UNK first at Kearney and then, you know, ended up, you know, pitching in the College World Series at Nebraska. That journey to me is as fascinating. I want to hear about the MLB days too, but can you kind of talk about your experience coming out of high school, and then did you always have your eye on hopefully transferring to Lincoln, or, you know, how did that play out? Would love to kind of hear that story.
No, I didn't think I was good enough at all. it was a dad thing. Like, my dad, I'll never forget. My dad was like, you're going to be one of the best players in the city. And I'm like, shut up, dad. You're supposed to say that. You're my dad. You're supposed to say these things. You're supposed to encourage me. And, you know, and then it happened, and, you know, I was all city, and then he's like, you're going to be one of the best players in the country. And that happened. And then he goes, you're going to be one of the best players to ever play baseball, not only from Nebraska, but in the major leagues. And I'm like, dad, you're supposed to say that. And I never really believed it. I mean, I worked my butt off and did all that, but yeah, the journey has just been kind of one thing after another, and it just kind of just kept manifesting into all these things. My dad was the main reason why I really got to Nebraska from UNK. I had got some looks. I was super state my senior year, obviously playing with guys like Gordo and doing all that, and Jeff and all those guys at Southeast. You know, you once a night's not enough. Once a rocket, always a rocket. So you know, that's how we feel. But it was just kind of the journey of UNK. Like, I'd gone to a bunch of junior colleges, and my dad was really big on education. And, you know, back then, junior college was kind of like you were the kid that either didn't have enough grades, and it wasn't like it is now. Like now junior college is way different, come to find out. Like it was weird going to, you know, seeing junior colleges with my son than, you know, 20 years ago I was going, and it was completely different. And now, I mean, their facilities are unbelievable, and they do semi care about school a little bit. Not much, because I don't know how much my son's been to class the last 2 weeks of his season, because they had 8 games last week, they had 6 games this week. And so it's just, it's baseball, baseball, baseball. And they have a really good, their football team actually won the national championship. Their basketball program is really good, both men's and women's, and we're in the top 25 in baseball. So it's a really good sports program. And so dad was like, all right, so I'm going to go to UNK. And I graduated, and I didn't go to school right away. I worked for the city on baseball fields and did that. And then my dad finally was like, you need to go play baseball. And I was like, well, I can help pay bills at home and do those things. And he's like, go play. I'll figure it out. We'll get it figured out some way, somewhere. And then, so went to Kearney. Terrible. I was awful. I was 3-5 with a 5.2 ERA. It was not good. And so I was a Legion baby. So I came home and they're like, you're throwing 100. And I'm like, what? Like, we didn't even have a gun. We had one guy that we scouts would come see, and I would be the slappy that was pitching the first game on Saturday. And it's like, holy cow, who is this kid? Why is he in Division II throwing 98? And I was like, I'm not throwing that hard. We don't even have a gun. Like, whatever. And so just pitch through Legion. And then they're like, hey, we want you to play summer ball for the Beatrice Bruins. And I was like, whatever. Like, I was hitting at the time. I think I hit like 500 with like 13 homers that summer. And so I was like, all right, cool. Like, yeah, sure. I guess I'll go through Clarinda, Iowa. My dad got lost. And that's when, that was before we could just type it into our phone, right? I'm over here looking at a damn atlas, and I'm like, yeah. I don't know what, and made a wrong turn and whatever. And so go up there, and Jeff Christie was my catcher. And so I obviously played against Jeff, and he was like, what do you have? This, that, another thing. And so go out, I pitch, what they come in and they're like, dude, do you know how hard you throw? And I was like, I don't know. You know, 80, I think I touched 89 in like high school. And they're like, dude, you sat 96 to 98. And I was like, oh, really? I go, all right.
O's.
Yeah, and so I'm like, all right, here we go, I guess. And so we had conversations with Nebraska. My dad actually, literally after my season, I didn't even win freshman of the year at Kearney, going 3-5. You can imagine why. I could beat by a kid named Tom Goodwin from Holdridge from Fort Hays State. Not that, you know, I hold that against him, but I won't forget that. And so we had conversations now that I knew that I was throwing that hard. And, but I was like, I went to college to hit and pitch, and I only threw like 40 innings, I think 50 innings, maybe my freshman year. And then going into what was at that point, the Big 12 was a baseball conference, you know, with Texas and Texas Tech, and which kind of was a football school, but they were pretty good in baseball, and Baylor and all those things. And so I was like, oh, I pitched good. And, you know, some of these guys were in that conference and other conferences. And I literally, like, I fell asleep after, and I woke up literally halfway home from that drive from Clarinda back home to Lincoln. And I was like, dad, I got to take it. This is like the first week of August, and school is starting literally the next week. And I was like, I got to take a chance. I got to, because we had Alex there. So I knew there was going to be scouts, and, you know, Alex was supposed to be, you know, one of the top three picks that year. And I was like, well, and he helped my career immensely, just because there was so many eyes on him, and I ended up having a really good year. And it kind of, we were in Houston, and it was a day after I pitched, and I pitched against New Mexico State. Actually, I was National Pitcher of the Week that week. And I was on the treadmill, and Coach Andy Sawyers comes in, and he goes, hey, I need you to fill this out. And I was like, what the hell is this? He goes, it's a draft card. And I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, scouts are asking about you. And I'm like, what? Really? Like, holy cow. And so then, yeah, obviously we go to the World Series that year. And we had been twice before. And we haven't been back since, which I hope we get back. Only pitcher ever to win a College World Series game in Nebraska history. And then, you know, have an okay junior year. Actually, I was national pitcher again that week at the Dairy Queen Classic in the Metrodome against Notre Dame. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep,
nice.
Definitely was.
Take and that, then, Jeff. Garbage program.
Yep,
garbage
then
program.
That night, we're all staying in the same hotel, and I'm sitting in a hot tub with Jeff Samardzija.
I was going to say, where's my boy Jeff Samardzija?
Yep. He didn't pitch.
Chicago Cub.
Against us. Yep.
Can he come to Thanksgiving dinner this year, Jeff?
He's a great dude. And then, you know, turnabout is fair play, and next thing I know, I'm about to have a child. And so a lot of teams were like, I didn't really tell anybody. Obviously, I was a 19-year-old kid. I was like, oh, what the hell am I going to do? I can barely take care of myself, let alone a kid. I'm living with my dad. I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen. And that's just kind of the way my life has worked. And I was like, all right. So I had my son April 25th. I almost missed his birth. I was playing in Texas and absolutely pitched like butt. And I run into Kyle McCullough, who became a good friend because we pitched against each other for a few years. And then he ended up getting drafted by the White Sox. And he's like, dude, are you all right? He goes, you didn't look the same. And I was like, no, I'm about to have a kid. And he was like, what? And I was like, yeah. And so my son's mother went into false contractions, and I was already in Texas. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to miss the birth of my child. I'm like, this is great. I'm starting off on a good foot here. And so thank goodness it held off. And so had him, and then literally nowadays you can watch the draft on TV. I'm living with my sister in her basement. And I'm in the laundry room on the computer watching the draft, and I got my son and his baby Bjorn, and it says I'm getting phone calls, and my agent's calling me, and he's like, yeah, you're going to get picked here. So found out I was getting drafted with my son in, and then basically I just handed him off and be like, I got to go do interviews now. Mm-hmm. And then it was just kind of a whirlwind from there.
What did that feel like?
I was going to say the same thing.
See that you got drafted by a major league baseball team. Like, was it just like, okay, yeah, this is the next thing? Or was it emotional for you? Or how are you feeling?
And before you jump into that, like, you had a tweet, I remember this probably from a year or two ago. Somebody got drafted for the Yankees, and you quoted their tweet and just said, no other feeling like it. So, like, I'm just curious what you meant by that, because that's got to be one of the greatest feelings, especially knowing your story. That's just got to be something that just – is mind-bending and mind-blowing.
Yeah, it was a lot. Obviously becoming a new father, as you all know, that's a task in itself, especially, you know, 19 years old and, you know, not even finished college and trying to, you know, finish your year and all of that. And so it was surreal in the aspect where I switched gears a little bit, and it was like, okay, now I can provide, because, you know, being a first round draft pick, you know, there's financial stability that comes with that.
100%.
And so it was like a weight off my shoulder to know that, you know, I was going to be able to, you know, take care of my child and provide and do all that stuff. And then it's just like, wow, I just got drafted by, you know, the Yankees. Stop calling my dad's phone. Golly. And so, yeah, it was surreal to know that's like, okay, you're going here. And then it hits you. It's like, this is a process. Like, I don't know if I'm going to start in low A, if I'm going to start in here. And then next thing you know, they're sending me to Hawaii to play winter ball. And wow. So now I'm a newborn dad. And then all of a sudden, I'm headed to Hawaii. And so then literally go from living in Lincoln to living in Hawaii and having a really good, I guess you could call it winter ball, but it's not, it wasn't winter in Hawaii. And then, less than a year later, I'm in the big leagues and the fastest that anybody's ever done in Yankee history. And it just, that year was a blur just because everything was happening so fast. But there is no other feeling. Like, one of Carter's buddies got drafted this year, actually two of them. One we knew very well, and the other one we had just played against and we just got to know because they just had really, really good battles and great parents, and Tyson Lewis, who went to Millard West, and then Cale Fountain, who went to Norris. Just that feeling of, like, holy cow, I did want to make it to the next level, and you finally get there.
You did
And
it.
then it kind of starts over, honestly, because you're like, I'm not getting, just because I got drafted doesn't mean I'm making the big leagues. Doesn't mean I'm going to get there. And so it's like, okay, I'm going to have to go through A ball, double A, triple A, and then, hopefully get the opportunity. And it was really kind of, it happened so fast for me. Like, my goal was to get to double A. And so I got there, and it was, I was like, perfect. You know what? I accomplished my goal, and then things just kind of kept going. And then I represented Team USA,
That's awesome.
and which is another crazy thing to, like, it's one thing to play for, like, yourself and, like, your team, but, like, to represent, like, this country and, where the USA, it's a little different. It definitely feels different. And you can sense that when you're playing against the world. It's like all the other countries, and it's just you guys, and you get playing against guys from Canada, and obviously being in a clubhouse with so many, different types, cultures, shapes and sizes was awesome. And then literally get called up. I had my worst ever outing, and I get called in the office, and I'm like, oh, I'm getting sent down. And they're like, nope, you're actually going to AAA. And I'm like, what? All right, sweet. Here we go, I guess. And so I was living out of a suitcase, the back of my car, trying to find places to live because they help with it now. But back then, it was like, if they called you up, you figured it out for yourself. Like, you're
Oh,
like, all right, I
geez.
guess. Yeah. So for a lot of these guys that get called up that, aren't making a bunch of money, you're in a two bedroom apartment with six guys, because
Oh.
I was making $300 basically every 2 weeks. That's what I was
Oof.
making.
Gotcha.
And so then you've got to pay for everything. Obviously, I was able to sign for some money, so, like, I didn't worry about it. But, like, some of these guys that, like I said, sleeping with four other dudes, and you got, I mean, it's like a frat house pretty much. Because it's like the only way you can afford it, because you got to eat, you got to play clubhouse dues. So, I mean, and that was, it just depend, but it was like $10 a day, $12 a day, $14 a day. So you have to pay that. And so there's so many things that people don't think about. Like, minor league baseball is a grind. And
What do the clubhouse dues go to?
it's basically your food. So, which in the minor leagues, it consists basically of peanut butter jelly sandwiches, some fruit, and ham and turkey sandwiches. That's really about it.
That's absurd. That's
No.
absurd. If they take that from you guys, that's absurd.
Yep. And so obviously it gets better when you get to the big leagues. And every level, gets a little bit better. But I mean, the clubhouse guy, he's doing your laundry. He's doing it. So basically, it's an accumulation of all of those things. And so you pay that per day. And so that's just another thing. And then it's, you're not chartered flights. You're on a bus, and you maybe get your own seat, you maybe don't. And so it's 12-hour bus rides. It's long nights, not staying in five-star hotels. And so it's a grind, and it's something that people don't think about, because usually all they see, and they're doing a better job of it now, like with the new bargaining agreement. So now all minor leagues are supplied housing and everything. So mm-hmm. they don't have to pay for that anymore. And when they moved up, there are places intact nice. Now. With so it's come a long way. But it was literally like as I was getting out of the game, and as of till like a couple years ago, they were still getting paid the same amount I was, you know, when I first came up. So
Sheesh.
it's brutal. Come a long way. Yeah, it's. I mean, if you play a season, like you don't even file taxes because you don't make enough money to even file.
Jeez, that's crazy.
Wow. I made more in my first 6-day paycheck in the big leagues than I did 2.5 months in the minor leagues.
Wow.
I like almost triple.
Wow.
So yeah, it's just a grind. And then once I got to the big leagues, everything happened so fast where it was kind of a blur. And you know, then the off season comes and then I'm on the cover of ESPN the magazine. And you know, doing photo shoots, which are the most weird things ever, because it's awkward. Like,
yeah.
Hey, stand here, do this, do that. And I'm like, I'm not a model by any means. Like, so
hey, I don't sell yourself short, Jabba.
Nope.
You're a handsome SOB.
Hey, you can only polish a turd so much, boys. so it's so just weird, like in all the things that came with that, and it was like, man, it's you know, it's my first year. I'm never gonna have a first experience again the way I did. And so it's just trying to, you know, take advantage of all those things. And I don't think that off season I was home for more than like a week at a time, just because it was like, hey, do an appearance here, do an appearance here. And never realized they'd pay you so much to sign a damn autograph. So I was like, yeah. I'm gonna take this opportunity. And all right. So yeah, it was just it all happened very, very fast and very unexpectedly. I mean, I did pitch well, but I didn't expect it to get to the big leagues within 3 months.
Right.
And was super cool. And then to be able to spend as much time as I did in the big leagues with four great organizations, obviously the most with New York. And, you know, just my son to be there, my dad to be there, you know, it was one of the coolest memories I ever have is, you know, having my dad, my son, when we won in 09, and then I had them both in 15 when we clinched with Kansas City.
Yeah.
And so just for them, I mean, Carter still hates champagne to this day because I walked him in the clubhouse and Nick Swisher sprayed him right in the face with champagne. He's still to this day, and he tells the story they were doing after he got all Nebraska his senior year. They did a sit-down interview with him. Kevin Suits from 10-11 did, and he still tells the same story. And it's like he'll never forget that. And you know, got to do that. And you know, as my father's passed away, going through like his pictures and stuff, I found a picture of us holding the trophy after we'd won our 09 World Series. Me and him, and
wow.
And so it's been cool. And I think the greatest thing that the game has given me is the memories that I was able to create, you know, not only with, you know, with my family, but with like other fans. And that is the one greatest thing about social media is like, I get pictures that I would have never known from yeah. fans. And
yep.
I follow some that still to this day, like I brought a little girl on the field on Anaheim and I gave her my cage jacket. And literally I'll still get messages every once in a while from her mom. And like, she's in college now and like all these things. So that's really the good side of social media. We all know there's a crappy side to it as well.
Right.
But for me, there's been so many just like overwhelming stories where I didn't think I was doing it. You know, I was just BSing with fans or just hanging out and being myself. And you hear all these stories and it's been really cool. And like I said, with my dad passing and hearing the stories of like, because I was on the field, I didn't know what my dad was doing. He probably could have been cussing somebody out or running somebody over in a scooter. I don't know. And so there's been some really cool. I met your dad here, and you know he gave us a pin or something like that. Like, so it's just really cool in that aspect of like the memories that it has created throughout. And yeah. Now it's like it's really cool to be a dad. And kind of see these things, you know, with Carter and what he is doing and just how like, you know, all the younger generation, like even the kids that he went to school with, like he would take them under their wing and make sure that they went and worked out and got their work in. So I think that's really been the coolest thing from all of this. And I think that's in any sport. And you kind of see that as this game progresses. And that's talking about baseball, basketball, football, all of these things. And you know, you're seeing younger generations now and their kids playing. And you know, it's just cool. Like I get to watch CeCe's son. He's now playing at Houston and you know, follow them and you get to follow all the kids that your son has played with. And it's like, man, these are so cool because it's like memories now and you weren't able to follow as much back then as you are now. So I think that's the coolest thing to be able to create those memories and you know, with guys that you played with and became friends with and you know, now you get to follow them in that aspect. So I think that's really the coolest thing.
And Jabba, I think TJ, did you, since we're talking about that era, you had a, more than a few iconic moments that went down in MLB history that people definitely remember. TJ, did you want to ask that
No, go
question real
for it.
quick?
Go for it. Go for it, Jeff.
Right, just tell us about the, everyone wants to know about the Midge game. That's what a lot of our audience to know about. Not to beat a dead horse, but you probably told the story a million times, but the Midges is something that I always see come up on social media.
Legendary.
Yeah, it never ceases to not come up at some point, especially in October usually.
Hey, right.
So yeah, no, it was something that you can't prepare for. You don't really know. But yeah, it just, you know, I come out and I get out of the seventh. Or no, I get out of the sixth or the seventh, one of the two. And it was fine. And then all of a sudden, like I get out there and I'm like, what in the world is going on right now? And thank goodness, I wish I didn't know this. So the story, like when the midges hatch, it means they're mating. I didn't know this. I didn't know this until I can thank Mark from The Athletic, who was one of our beat writers that was covering us back then, and now he is the producer director for The Athletic. And he like they were doing a story, and he kind of looked and he called an entomologist, which an entomologist is basically the study of bugs and entomology and all that. So yeah, basically having all these bugs, they were basically fornicating on my face and all over my body. So I wish I didn't know that. That could have been one fact that I didn't want to know. But
That's
yeah, and
hilarious.
so they sprayed bug spray on. And actually that attracts them
I was gonna
more.
say that doesn't work, right? Not with
No,
those.
off did not work. It turned on. And so it's vinegar and dryer sheets. So if
I
anybody
see.
that listens to this, is anybody ever attacked by midges? Because I think we do have those on Capitol Beach here in Lincoln. They do that every once in a while. So it's vinegar and dryer sheet. So just for everybody's knowledge, if that
The
happens to you.
combination, or one or either one will
One
work.
or the other. Yep. One or the other. And so I was more pissed that, you know, I gave up the lead and didn't do my job. And I don't ever use the bugs as an excuse. But my career ended and like we've done stories and I always tell a story. I asked, well, I come in after I give up the lead and I'm obviously not very happy with myself. So I break a chair and something. It ended up costing me money. And Hideki Matsui is warming up and he like hits me on the back and excuse my language, but he was like, holy shit. Because they just went I didn't know they were in my ears. Like I didn't know it. And so yeah, so it cost me money. And yeah, it was just it's something where it's like you can't prepare for it. But you know what? It's a memory that will forever live in postseason history. So
Yeah,
I guess
for sure.
there could be worse things, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, anytime I see that pop up on Twitter, more often than not, it's definitely an all-time iconic moment in the history of MLB, that's for sure.
Who is the favorite manager you played for in the big leagues?
Oh man, that's tough because they were all great in their own right. All baseball players. Most were catchers. They were all great in their own like own way. Torrey was obviously towards the end of his career, and he was, you know, he was kind of let the players go. And then I had Girardi, who obviously played for the Yankees and Cubs and Rockies, and he had just played with these guys, you know, not too long ago.
Right.
And so he was more of a hands-on, a Northwestern guy, really like kind of one of the first stages of like the analytical thing. Like he literally had his own like account on Twitter. It wasn't his, but he was very analytical, very smart man. And so they had what was called Girardi's book, because they'd always see him looking at his book. So that was like the start for me of like not as in depth as it is now, with all the analytical stuff. But and then go to Osmus, who had, you know, obviously been a catcher and been a great catcher for a lot of years, and he's actually the bench coach now for the Yankees. And then Ned Yost was great. He was kind of a Torrey-esque guy with Kansas City, and you know, he was one of those ones where it was kind of, you know, that the clubhouse was the clubhouse, and he just managed. He kind of stayed away from that. And then Tito was probably the most different. Like, I loved him to death. He hated me because obviously I pitched against him in Boston. I'll never forget when they gave him the boot out of Boston. Then he went to work for ESPN. And we're walking in spring training one time, and he goes, "I can talk to you now." He goes, "I hated you when I played against you, but I can talk to you now. And I just say I want to respect your game." And I was like, "I appreciate it." Then got to play with him, and he was so cool. And like, you know, he would play cards with the dudes and hang out. And you know, and his only rule that he had, like, kids are always welcome. He goes, "My only rule is they have to come and say hi to me when they get to the clubhouse." And so Carter loved that. And
that's awesome.
That's cool.
You know, being able to run, and Detroit was the same way. Like, I'll never forget, because in New York, your kids weren't allowed on the field. And then So when I became a free agent, that was one thing that was really important to me. And So when we're going through all these negotiations and all this other stuff, that was a question that I had. I go, is my son allowed? And I'll never forget, Cart came to opening day in Detroit. We opened on the road, but then when we got home and, you know, we're running on the field, like, they gave him a whole uni and all the other stuff. He had his own locker. Like, he was like, "Oh, this is crazy." And so we were getting ready to run on the field, and he stops and he goes, "Dad, I can't go on the field." I go, "Nope, it's different here." And so, you know, he'd run on the field. He's catching fly balls from Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez. We got to, you know, become great friends with Victor and Victor Jose. Victor Jose is now playing college baseball. And so Joe Nathan's son, Cole, who's now a sophomore in college. And so he just got to create cool relationships. They were around the field
awesome.
A lot. And, you know, as soon as they were done, they could go, they would literally roam and do, I mean, have what carte blanche to everything. They'd go in the kids' room, grab like an ice cream, then they'd go up to the suite, and then they would just run around and do all that. And
nice.
So yeah, and then the same way in Cleveland and Kansas City, it was just, they were all great in different ways. I mean, Girardi was so funny, he was so smart, but yet I'd have to go in and help him to try and FaceTime to help his daughter with math. Wow. And he's like, "How did I get this to work?" And they just gave me this. You know, that's when iPads were fairly new at that point. And so he's like, how do I set this up?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, you come talk to the young kid, because I know." And so, but yeah, they were all special in their own rights and different. And you know, all the clubhouses are different just because there's so many different dynamics to them.
Segue there, just because you're talking about New York not letting kids on the field. They have some different rules for the Yankees organization, and you're a big beard guy. As long as I've known you personally now, you've always rocked a beard, myself included. They changed the rules for the Yankees now as far as facial hair requirements. What's your thoughts on that? You fan? You like it being a little bit more, you know, not as old-fashioned anymore? What do you think
about
that?
Yeah, I've had this conversation with a lot of people, and I knew why they did it, and I've kind of gotten a 50-50 about how people like it and don't like it. I understand, like, some of the old heads, like, they love the tradition and they love that stuff. And people are like, well, nobody's ever turned down a contract or talked to the Yankees because, and I go, you're wrong, because obviously I'm not going to out them, but I have had personal conversations with people that are like, I'm not even entertaining New York because if I'm told I have to shave. But also, they were talking about this yesterday in spring training. David Cone, obviously, who played with the Yankees and threw a perfect game. But it was like, you could get away with it if you were winning. Like, I pushed it. I mean, I got kicked out of the dugout before and told to go shave because I pushed it a little far. But I mean, you could get away with it a little bit. I think if it's not crazy, but and then at the same time, when I went to Detroit, I was like, I don't have to shave anymore, and it was ridiculous. Like, I
Yeah.
didn't trim it, I didn't do anything, I did not
I
care.
remember seeing a video of you pitching where you had a
Did
freaking
not
huge beard going.
care. I was like, all right, I don't have to. That's when I
That's
figured out
awesome.
that the beard oil game is strong, because they were
There
sending me stuff all the time, and I'd
you
get home
go.
from a road trip and I'd be like, what? I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. But I
That's
think
hilarious.
it's one of those things where it's just like, if you feel good, you play good. And
Yeah.
people, it sounds kind of cliche to say, but it is true to know that it's like, oh damn, do I have to shave today? Like, is this too long? Like, you're looking at it, and I understand it's a profession and in a workplace and all that stuff, which people don't really think about it like that. But I mean, it's our job.
Yeah.
It's cool, but I understand it, and there are some professions where you have to have certain ramifications of presentation and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
But I think in this aspect, I think it's just completely different in where that you're able to, kind of be yourself, and not really have to worry about it. It's like, oh, and there are some guys that shave all the time. There's some guys that can't grow a beard, that that's just what they do. And but
Yeah.
there are other guys that do. And so it for me, it's like, okay, you let them be their individualistic self, because that is why you sign them, because not only their talent, but now they get to, be themselves and not worry about shaving all the time. And it's been about 50-50 on kind of people's opinions. For me, obviously, being a beard person. And or if you can
Beard
just grow
guy.
you can just grow chin hair or something like that. Like,
There you
you can
go.
have it and
Soul
not
patch.
yeah not have to worry about it. So
Yeah.
I think that's more so of just the freedom of being able to just kind of, okay, if it goes, it goes, and then I'll line it up, trim it up, do whatever. Or shit, if I want to shave, I'll shave.
Yeah, there
So
you go.
I personally, I like it.
I
There
saw
you
this
go.
story on social media. I have no idea if it's true or not, but after the announcement, Lou Piniella, who a lot of baseball fans will know that name, he's a longtime player and manager, but he played for the Yankees and apparently said to Steinbrenner at one point, Jesus Christ had hair and a long hair and a beard. Why can't we have beards and long hair? And Steinbrenner pointed to a small pond beyond the outfield fence. You see that pond? Steinbrenner asked. Walk across that pond and you can have a beard and long hair.
That is a true story. That's
Is
it.
incredible.
That's
That's
so
an awesome
great.
quote.
That's so
That's
great.
hilarious.
And it was and it started because Thurman Munson grew a beard for Picture Day, and that was in 75.
Okay.
So that was the so that year, that next year, he implemented the no facial hair. And it was supposed to be no sideburns below, like, mid of your ear.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was. And I got to know George, and he was awesome. He was awesome to me, he was awesome to my dad. And it was cool to be able to play for him, and in the old stadium with the storied history that it had,
Yep.
and to have a really cool record that will obviously stand forever, because that stadium is gone. I'm the last person ever to strike somebody out at old Yankee Stadium.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, just really cool to have that opportunity and, you know, be able to share that and, you know, have those really cool memories of like all the things that had happened in that stadium, and then being able to obviously open the new stadium and win the first year that we were there. So yeah, just been some really cool things, and it's they're changing. And I think a lot of things have changed. And the facial hair one is probably one of the biggest ones, because it was, you know, it was what George did. And you know, and I think, you know, if he ran the team nowadays, it would probably be different. But you know, I know everybody's like, he's rolling over in his grave right now. I don't, maybe he is, because he's like, knowing his personality, knowing who he was, he's probably fired a few people and from above, and they still show up to work.
Well, Jabba, before we wrap up here, I had this is a Husker football podcast, so I got to get your opinion. We all do. What's your opinion on the state of Husker football as we know it right now? And are we going to take the patented Matt Rhule year three leap?
I mean, we've obviously seen his track record with programs and how he's done with certain programs. I think we are in the right hands. I do think that. I think he understands that, and he's brought some guys in to try and fix, you know, certain aspects, from special teams to, you know, coordinators to things like that. And I've gotten to know Matt over a little bit of time. I've had him on a podcast before, and got to know him a little bit.
Send him our way when you have a chance too, Joe. I
Okay. Yep.
appreciate
Yep. We'll do. We'll do.
that.
He's a regular. He's a regular listener, probably.
Yeah. I'll let him know. And so, yeah, I think at the state it's in, I think they're in the right hands. Also, I think there's so many different ramifications now with the way things have changed, the landscape of college football in so many ways, and how NIL has affected a lot of things, the transfer portal and things of that nature, where we're seeing that abundantly happen in different places. And you know, 19, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, you know, making more than probably 90% of the population. And you know, they're playing a college sport. So that definitely changes some things in certain ways that I believe. Do I think there needs to be a cap on NIL? 100%. I've gotten to know a little bit more about that with, you know, my son being now involved in college sports and getting a better understanding of, you know, what it is per se, not only like on the surface, but a little bit deeper. And so I think as far as it's, you know, getting to a bowl game is one thing. I think it's not as bestowed upon as it used to be, because there are so many bowl games now. And you know, being a 6-win team to be bowl eligible, that would have never happened back in the day. And so I think there's getting to a bowl game, and then there's getting to a bowl game. And I think we have everything in place. I think we have the right guys. I think the personnel that we have, not only, you know, from Matt and down, but the guys on the field, I think, you know, are in the right system. They're recruited for this aspect of the way that they're going to run things. And I think we get more than 6 wins, I think. But I do think the state that it's in right now is it's in the right hands, and I think we'll have an opportunity to, you know, make that next jump, as we've seen Rule do with other programs. And I think he's just embedded the culture of what it is. And obviously you see Riola and those guys out at games. I mean, they were at a Southwest game. You've seen them at all kinds of games. And they do, I mean, it's basically they do a thing. It's like, you know, Rhule wants them out in the community. And you've obviously seen Rhule in small towns and doing all
Dude's
these
all
other
over the
things.
place.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's easy when you can just hop on a PJ and go wherever you want. So that makes it
My
a
son
little
was like
bit
a
easier.
picture popped up today. He's like a food judge in some contest for some reason. Like he's just everywhere. So yeah, I agree. I mean, with the expansion of like the playoff too, it's favorable. It gives people hope that, you know, maybe we'll have a shot at making the playoffs since there's more spots to fill now. So yeah, I agree with you. I think we're in the right heading in the right direction. And hopefully hopefully we will see that year three leap. I hope.
Yeah, as long as Notre Dame doesn't win, so it's fine.
Yeah, watch exactly. your mouth. That's watch exactly your mouth.
Right. That's exactly watch right.
Job. You've, hey, Rocco now being on the team, I mean, it's going to be nice for the Huskers to have somebody that's seen the brightest of the bright lights of college football and uh-huh. to be a leader for this program. Uh-huh. So, yeah. uh-huh. In a roundabout way, you can thank Notre Dame if Nebraska makes the playoffs.
Can you stop talking, Jeff? Okay. well, and we forgot to mention, Matty O had to jump early. So for those of you watching, you probably saw him disappear from the screen, but he had to jump early, unfortunately. Job, a thoroughly enjoyable conversation, man. I could sit here and brain and ask you questions for hours, but appreciate you spending a little bit of time with the Common Fans. Jeff, you look like you have one last thing to say.
I do. Truly thank you for coming on the podcast. It means a lot. And our sincere condolences in the passing of Harlan. We sorry to hear that, and our thoughts and prayers are with you and your family.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate it. Yep. He was a staple here in more ways than one, and some I don't want to hear about. most of the ones I do. And no, he had a great run, and we got a lot more time with him than we thought we were. And, you know, we got to say our piece, and, you know, we're going to have a celebration on Monday and, you know, just kind of hang out and, you know, share stories and do all that. So yep. he was a staple in more ways than one. And I would an absolute honor to have him in my 39 years. And, you know, for Carter and all of his grandkids and everybody that he either pissed off or, you know, made smile. So he had a good run, and, you know, you always hate to see him go, but he's in such a better place. And now I don't have to worry about him going back and forth to the damn hospital and showing up at a hospital. And I'm like, yay, now I can just have a conversation and look up and flip him off or do something. So it's great.
Very good. Well, very good.
Glad to hear that. It's always really meaningful when you have a chance to say everything you want to say. So I'm glad.
For sure. And everybody got to do that. So that's awesome.
Good. He is the only pitcher in Nebraska history to win a college World Series game. He won. Was it the one the last or you pitched or won the last game ever at the old Yankee Stadium?
Last strikeout
mm-hmm. at the old Yankee Stadium. He's a World Series champion two times. All kinds of accolades and awards. And of course, he's a Husker legend. Jabba Chamberlain, thank you so much for joining the Common Fans today, my friend.
You got it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, we'll be back at you soon, Common Fans. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.